Welcome along to the Race to Dubai show. Today we'll be talking G-Max gutsy win in the desert, ill-timed TV interviews, slow play, is short the new long, the life of a first alternate and hangover cures. We'll hear from our winner in Saudi plus DJ and Phil, and we'll be looking ahead to the European Tour's next event, the ISPS Handa Vic Open. You're with Dan Roebuck alongside me, John Hawksworth, former European Tour player and now commentator. John, how are you?
Nearly survived another winter.
Wonderful. Richard Kaufman, commentator and host of At The Open Radio. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, looking forward to it.
So, Graham McDowell wins the Saudi International and, as is the way, fellow pros immediately start to discuss celebrations and, inevitably, the morning after, Lee Westwood on Twitter says, right, at Graham McDowell, and before it gets messy, electrolytes, water, Nurofen, fry up, not necessarily in that order. If that fails, pickled onion monster munch. Hope that helps. Hangover cures, John. Your best hangover cure. Just in case Graham is still suffering.
I'm banging my head on the wall. It took my mind off the hangover.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Richard?
Yeah, the fry-up's a really good one. The pickled onion monster munch, though. I mean, I don't agree with that.
A bit too claggy for me.
You just want toast. Yeah, I'll tell you. Toast with butter on it. Acts like a sponge. You don't want to fry up at all.
Well, my son loves pickled onion monster munch.
Does he drink a lot?
He's only eight, so he does, but he likes fizzy drinks rather.
You've got plenty in the house then, just in case.
I do, but the smell, I mean, you know, he's sitting next to me at football and all I can smell is the monster munch.
Graham McDowell, we don't know what he's actually doing to cure his hangover, if indeed he's got one, but he wins his first European Tour title in over 5.5 years, finished 12 under, two clear of the defending champion at Royal Greens Golf and Country Club. That was Dustin Johnson. An 11th European Tour title. European Tour copy at the start of their review said gutsy, I thought grinding. It was that sort of day for him, wasn't it, I think?
I think it was a great performance. I mean, you look at Westwood's in Abu Dhabi, then McDowell, you know, he dropped a long way down the world rankings. Anyone in the PGA Tour? And now has won again on the European Tour. What is he, 40 years of age? That was a class field. Johnson, Koepka, Thomas Peters were there, a host of players, tricky conditions, but you don't win a US Open round somewhere like Pebble Beach if you can't play the game. And it was windy, and he had a very good caddy, which he's had for years on the bag, Ken Conboy. And he said he'd worked really, really hard. There's a difference to working hard and producing. It got to within one at one stage, and then he held a couple of crucial putts. But, you know, he'd won 10 times before on the Race to Dubai, so... And I thought he looked incredibly cool for somebody who's been out of kind of the winner's circle on our side of the pond for 5 years.
Yeah, but it just shows you, doesn't it, that you don't have to be playing your best golf to win.
No, no.
I mean, I was watching the front nine yesterday. He was struggling to hit fairways, but he was hanging in there. I mean, when you've got a putter that works like his did all week long... I think he said, didn't he, on Saturday night?
He said about his kids. He said, we live in a nice house because I can putt.
That's right.
Well, I'd rather be an average striker and a great putter than a great striker and an average putter.
Oh, without question. Hang on. Surely that's the other way around, isn't it?
No. I'd rather...
Well, it was very interesting.
Rather putt great all through your career. You'll always make a living. Look at Finau.
Haven't we found out recently that the, you know, putt for dough is a bit of a myth?
Well, it's not. You'd much rather be able to hole... consistently from 10, 12 feet and 5 feet and in.
A little bit more on the final round in just a second, but we can hear from Graham McDowell after his win yesterday, back up to 47th in the world rankings and a winner in Europe again for the first time in 2,037 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Winning putts at 18 and Graham McDowell a winner again. G-Mac is back. A closing 70. 12 under par.
Goodness
and
me.
Graham McDowell wins by two.
I didn't realize it had been quite that long here in Europe. I'm very excited. I'm very relieved. This is a difficult golf course this week. You know, it's unusual to win feeling as uncomfortable as I did on a lot of these holes, you know, because it was a tough golf course these last 2 days, especially were tough conditions. The birdie on 14 and 15 were just huge at the time, and it was nice to have that little cushion coming down the last couple. But my big goal this year was to be back in the top 50 of the world, back competing in the big tournaments. I'm very excited that it's happened a little faster than I expected, but hopefully it's laying some foundations down for having a big year. I really feel like I'm moving in the right direction, and it's weeks like this that really give you that they give you that kick on effect, and hopefully I can use it.
How long has that road been getting yourself back into the world's top 50?
It hasn't even been on the radar, probably until about 6 months ago, when I really started feeling like I was turning the corner. I mean, the win in Dominican last year in the PGA Tour was huge, just to keep my job in the right place, you know, to give me a job to go to for the foreseeable future. Once I had that ticked off, it was a case of how do I start getting better here? How do I get myself back to where I want to be? You know, the fourth in Hawaii a few weeks ago was massive. This is obviously huge, world-class field here. You know, number one player in the world here. Massive to win, massive world ranking points, and like I say, hopefully I can kick it on now into the season.
You played four Ryder Cups. How much is that on your mind? Is it too early to say?
Too early to say. Westy, you know, he texted me last night, you know, when I was leading. I was thinking about him a little bit the last 24 hours and his win in Abu Dhabi. You know, I guess we didn't really enjoy the vice captaincy thing in Paris, so I'd love to be on the team. But there's a lot of things need to happen between now and then before I can get myself onto the team. I'm a little like Lee. I want to play my way onto the team. I don't want to have to rely on that pick. But we'll see. A lot of things need to happen. My schedule's going to change a little bit here. Maybe in Mexico, maybe in the Masters, things like that, you know. So we were trying to plan an Easter holiday with the kids the week of the Masters. That may have to go on hold now.
Do you feel your game's getting back to somewhere near its best?
Yes, I do. You know, it's been 10 years since I won a US Open. 10 years probably since I played the best golf of my life. I feel like I'm moving back in the right direction. I've got my head around what I'm trying to do with the swing and what I'm trying to do with the golf ball again, thanks to Kevin Kirk, who I started working with last August, and Pete Cowan, who's been by my side for many, many years. You know, Kenny on the bag there. I've got a solid team. Life settled down, you know. I got a great wife and a great family. I'm very, very happy with what's going on in my life right now. I feel like the ripples on the pond have just kind of steadied out a little bit now, and I'm in a good place to play some good golf. And, you know, Kevin said to me, there's no reason why the best golf in your career can't still be ahead of you. I like that kind of idea. I like that focus.
How much resolve did you have to show on the golf course today? How much experience to count to get you over the line?
Yeah, a lot of things going on today. You know, we were a bit out of position. So that bad time on Thursday was all of a sudden kind of looking like it could be a serious problem. And I want to kind of say something about that. The referee, Andrew Snodden, is it?
Snoddy.
Yeah, Snoddy. I just want to apologize to him. You know, I felt like I threw him under the bus. He's trying to do his job. And the referees on the European Tour, they run a brilliant show. You know, I felt like they're extenuating circumstances. They stood by their guys, and hey, they're trying to apply the rules of golf here. Apply the rules of golf, and no hard feelings on my end. And you know, once that was resolved, we moved on. It looked like it was going to become a little bit of a problem out there, because Victor and I could not seem to get back in position today. It was pace of play was Sunday. Everyone was trying to get out of here, and we just couldn't seem to catch up. But you know, thankfully we got the job done today. And like I say, big shout out to the European Tour referees and everything they do for us on tour.
Graham McDowell, talking about his win in Saudi. He mentioned the slow play incident, which we will get to soon. Just on his final round, the key points he talked about for the 14th and the 15th, he talked about the fact he was looking at leaderboards. There was pressure applied, wasn't there, by a number of players, but they didn't get beyond him. He was always in the lead over the course of the final day, I think. Victor Dubuisson, he was playing with, who we knew well from his Ryder Cup days a few years ago. It's not as if he was overtaken. He seemingly had just enough in hand over the course of that last day.
Yeah, and it was a tricky day to play golf. I mean, there was some good scoring. Garcia finished with a great final round, as did Dustin Johnson, but of course he bogeyed 16, all right, he eagled the last. But, you know, Peters ran out of time. He just did enough, but 14 and 15 were crucial, that he kept that, as they call it, momentum going. You've got to hold some crucial putts at crucial times. There's none better than him. It doesn't matter whether you win by five or one. He got across the line. He didn't get across the line scruffy, but as I say, it was a tough day. And someone's always going to make a charge at you, but invariably they're going to run out of holes, and a few did that.
He referenced the win on the PGA Tour as well, which was under a year ago. Mm. I know it wasn't one of the bigger events on the PGA Tour. It might have actually been an alternative tournament week, wasn't it, where they had two events on the PGA Tour. But that must have done a lot for his confidence. And he seems, judging by that interview, in a very, very good place about his game.
Well, he mentioned it lifted a burden for him. You know, he's worrying about his playing rights. You know, it'd been a tough few years for them. He said he got married 2013, kids came along, golf was suddenly not a priority for him. And then you get to the age where maybe you're going to lose it all and you think, oh, hold on, and the kids are starting to become aware and you think, well, I want to show the kids that, you know, Dad still can do it as well. And, you know, he's refocused. I think that's what it is. I think he lost a little bit of the focus. He's admitted it himself. And he's refocused. Now, it's not always easy just because you refocus that you're going to get it back. And he's been given this second chance. There was another interview he did yesterday where he talked about he wanted another opportunity of taking on these guys, getting in the top 50, playing in all these big events. I mean, wonderful, after he won in the Dominican Republic last year, that putt he held at the Canadian Open to get into the Open at Portrush. I think that was a big thing. And there's been lots of building blocks for Graham McDowell.
It was a bit like Poulter, wasn't it, when Poulter had that...
Poulter won in Houston, was it?
Yeah, but then also he had that finish prior to that, was it at...
At the Players.
At the Players Championship.
Yeah, to get that got him into Houston, I think, didn't it? Yeah.
Where your life's kind of on the line, it shows what you're made of, doesn't it? I mean, some people would melt, but if you've had careers like they have, they know it's there. It's just reaffirming it and doing it again, and they both did it.
Yeah, to be world-ranked, 262 this time last year. Now he's back in the top 50. That's an incredible 12 months.
It is when you're 39 and now 40, because there's a lot of young, great players about. To go back the other way when you've had a bad time shows what you're made of, I think.
Porrig Harrington, talking about the Ryder Cup, says I might have to rethink my potential vice-captains and tagged in Graham McDowell and Lee Westwood. Will one, both, any make the team?
I would say both.
Did you see Eddie Pepperell's response?
Yes. Said, I'm available. What, as a vice-captain?
As a vice-captain,
he'd be a good vice-captain, though, wouldn't he? He'd be good in the room.
He can be in charge of social media.
Absolutely, yeah. There'd be no faux pas there.
I think it's important.
There'd be no Danny Willett brother situations with Eddie in charge.
I think it's important to have some people in that... I've had experience, obviously. I think it's going to be a very different team and you've got to start somewhere. But to go to America with a newish team, of course there'll be regulars in. I expect Garcia, of course, McIlroy will be there. Fleetwood will be there. That's 25% of the team, isn't it? But there will be some rookies in there. Again, it's a different experience.
One final point of order with Graham McDowell for now. He picked up a warning for slow play in the second round after doing a mid-round interview. He said after the second round, Tim Barter is out there interviewing for Sky Sports and he asked me to do an interview walking up the fairway, which I said yes to. I took an extra few seconds and he, the official, gave me a monitoring penalty. It upset my rhythm for a couple of holes. I was trying to play too fast. I was disappointed he didn't give me a little more room for error on the situation. But hey, we've got to play faster, as simple as that. And in the interview we just heard, he apologises in effect and says that the officials and so on, you know, do a great job. I mean, that situation, you guys work in TV when it comes to golf. I mean, do you like the interviews from a commentary point of view, from a listening and watching public point of view? I quite like them. Sometimes I don't say too much, but I think it adds a little bit of colour.
I don't know how much I can say, but there are rules and regulations regarding these interviews.
I mean, it's unfortunate to get put on the clock.
So there's directives. First of all, he apologised. He didn't apologise because, I don't know if you heard the interview, he didn't actually say anything bad in the interview. However, when he hit his shot...
He mumbled a bit, didn't he?
He said, such a rush to hit this shot, it's a joke. So that's what he's apologising for. He forgot that he could have had a time out, and he asked for the time out after he hit the shot, by which time the referee said, sorry, it's too late, you have to ask. But he said, I didn't think about it. But it is harsh, isn't it, John, that he's done an interview, so he's now he's 50 yards behind his playing partners. He's then first to hit. His ball's in the rough. He's got an awkward shot, but he's now suddenly got those 45, 50 seconds.
It is a little bit harsh, but, you know, circumstances... For me, slow play, I mean, I've played with some people. You could go out on the golf course, start on the first tee, and you'd end up on the 18th with a beard. They took so long. And the problem with slow play is psychologists tell you to do nothing until it's your turn to hit. These people wouldn't hit a barn door with a cricket bat that are telling you to do this. When I was playing, you'd be ready. As soon as the guy's ball had gone, you'd be ready. You wouldn't be glove on, what's the yardage, where's the wind, how far did we hit that club on, what's it hole? But it's now the game has changed dramatically in your approach to hitting a golf shot. It's much more regimented and set out in numbers of the procedure that you go through. And for me, the players are taught to do that. And it's part of your routine, and it is slowing the game down. There are some players who play Paratore plays, it must be a nightmare for him because he plays so quick. He spends so much time hanging around because he's got nothing to do because he's hit his shot. Whereas other players take so much time to hit the shot. And I just think Graham McDowell, I wouldn't class him as a slow player. It's a set of circumstances there. But I think the people that are being coached by these psychologists and whatever need to just take a look at the game for the good of the game from the viewer's point of view. Get a move on.
I noticed you steered away from the TV situation as you're both Sky Sports regulars. But there you go.
I
think the interview thing... the interview
he's
thing,
unlucky there.
Yeah, the it was a set of circumstances. Yeah. The interview thing is good and it does bring a different dynamic to it. It was just the set of circumstances that was unfortunate for him, I would say. Yeah. It's not as if you're stood doing the interview, you're walking.
I always do worry, though, when they do the in-round interview, that the guy's then going to go double bogey, triple bogey, and, like, it's because his mindset's been changed by doing the TV interview.
And also stuff's been asked that you probably wouldn't have thought of.
But they don't. They've been told to try and keep the interviews general rather than specific. Correct. But, for example, if I'm at a tournament and, like, it's the Sunday morning and I want to go on the range, I am worried about asking players certain things because, as you say, John, you don't want to suddenly put something in someone's
head. The
secret,
Richard, is you just blow smoke up a very small area. That's all you do. You don't start sucking the smoke out of them. So you wouldn't go up to Garcia and go, second to last group today, but you bogeyed the last yesterday, didn't you? I think you'll find the zip going across his mouth. You blow smoke. It's like starting a wood burner. That's what you do.
But I'm trying to...
Never negative with them.
No, not negative, but I'm trying to
get some information.
I'm trying to gather info.
To help the broadcast.
You've got a pussyfoot round them. Trust me, you can't go wading in saying those trousers look a bit tight today.
Someone who didn't pussyfoot around on Twitter, and this is another slow play issue. This is Justin Harding. There's a thread on Twitter. It's out there in the public domain, as everything is on Twitter. He says that turtles should be monitored at all times. We as players who don't take an age should not be responsible for them, nor should our own be affected by their inconsiderate behaviour. Pretty simple, really. Thomas Bjorn weighs in, so does Matt Wallace and Christian Bezuidenhout as well. Just one final point on this. I mean, the more it's brought to everyone's attention, and if they're not leaders on telly, the watching public like me don't really understand it. But if there's more and more players called out, does it get self-policed a bit more, do you think? Because players get embarrassed about it, or is that a non-factor? They're in the zone, and as you say, they're not going to start, you know, their preparation until, you know, their psychologist or whatever their approach is, they're just going to do it as normal.
If you're a slow player and you've got to start quickening up, it can be very unnerving for you because it's not what you used to do. And it's like changing your routine by 7 seconds, for argument's sake. It's a hard thing to do because you don't feel as if you're doing the right thing.
But there's much more conversation about it, is what I'm saying now.
I think that 12 months ago, we have moved a long way. And I think one of the key things to that was Eduardo Molinari at the start of last year.
He called a few people out.
Well, he posted the list of who's had bad times. And the only way that this was going to change is if it came from the players. Because you've seen with officials, whether they be on the PGA Tour, whether they be on the LPGA Tour, whether they be on the European Tour, there's a certain, lack of motivation to maybe rock the boat on this. It had to come from the players. It has come from the players. We have now seen the rules change. I think they may even become more extreme to the benefit of the game, to the benefit of the viewers as well. And yes, it had to come from the players and it has started. And here's another really good example of a player trying to make sure that the game is looked after, and all credit to Justin Harding for doing that.
Absolutely, completely agree with that. We can move on to talk about one or two of the other players who peppered the leaderboards over the course of the 4 days in Saudi. First of all, one of the big name Americans in the field, world number 5, Dustin Johnson.
I mean, I'm pleased with the way I played, but I'd like to give Graham a little more pressure. You know, coming down the stretch there, I had some really good chances. I missed a real short one on 13, real close one on 14, 15, 16, 17. So, you know, I had all the chances, but I did finally make a nice putt on 18 to finish second.
Eagled the last to finish second in his defence of the title from last year. DJ coming over to play, put up a decent effort. Your thoughts on Dustin at the moment? Because he's not played that often, has he? Did he go under the knife late last calendar year?
Yeah, Dustin Johnson. Okay, he's always a big draw, isn't he? He's entertaining. He's the only bloke the only player that broke 70 four times and didn't win, which would, as the defending champion. But you put him on any golf course, he's always entertaining. And he's a big draw, big world player. He's come over to Saudi again for the second year running and produced the goods, just come up short.
Yeah, interesting, though, that his winning score last year was 19 under. Graham McDowell won this year at 12 under par. You look at last week, Lucas Herbert won at 9 under. Bryson DeChambeau won in Dubai at 24 under. Do you think, John, that maybe Rory's comments about courses not being tough enough on the European Tour, do you think people have maybe listened and they have been toughened up a little bit?
The ball goes so far now. Your defence is the rough around the greens and the penal rough off the fairways, and the fairways narrowed down a little bit. But good players will always find a way to get around it. I don't care if 3 under wins it or 22 under wins it.
Okay.
Just on Rory, as we've mentioned him, good interview in the Irish Independent that you've been across that you want to mention.
Yeah. Fantastic, yeah. The first part of 3 is only out as of yesterday. Paul Kimmage is a fantastic journalist. I mean, really, his interviews, if you haven't read it, go in the backlog. There's one of Rory and Harrington, for example, that's fantastic. But this one, and I'm waiting to find out what the next two cover, but for example, this covered what went wrong at the Open Championship, at how
The club face was shut at impact.
Funny enough, that doesn't get mentioned in the interview.
There you go, 15 words instead of 3,000.
It can't go left unless it's shot.
There's the breakup with his caddy JP, and you know, now working with Harry Diamond. There's, you know, what happened in that final round at the Tour Championship with Tiger Woods. There's the final round at the Masters. There's his first meeting with Brad Faxon and his putting. There is so much. It's a fairly lengthy read, but if you're a fan of golf, if you're a fan of Rory McIlroy and of really good journalism, I'm sure he listens to the podcast as well.
I'm sure he does, absolutely.
And will give us a little boost as well. Yeah. But honestly, no, fantastic interview.
Have a look at that. Back to Saudi. Phil Mickelson we're going to talk about next. We can hear from him. First of all, though, he finished tied third to prove that there is indeed life in the old dog yet.
It was sure fun coming down that back nine with an opportunity, with a chance, knowing if I could shoot 3-4 under par that I'd have a chance to win this tournament. And I haven't felt that in a while. I haven't played my best. I haven't been my best this last year since I won Pebble a year ago. And I'm excited to go back there next week with a little bit of momentum. I feel like I have been playing well, but yet I haven't had the results. I've missed a couple of cuts. And this week I really started to put things together, and it's a great week to build off of. I've had a good week.
You put yourself in a position. Do you feel those putts on 16 and 17 was the ultimate turning point?
Certainly I needed those to go. But I've putted so well this week and made putt after putt, par after par. And it wasn't easy putting with the wind, where you've got the ball breaking opposite the break because of the wind and trying to judge it all. And I was able to really get tuned in on the greens and make a lot of putts that kept the round going and gave me opportunities. So even though those didn't go, but that one on 17 was so close. I thought I had that right there, and it just caught the lip. It was so fun having a chance, being in the thick of it again, feeling my game come back, feeling the ease at which I've been swinging. I was off a little bit today. I was a little jumpy. I was a little bit antsy, a little bit quick. But the first few days, I really struck it well, and I fought hard to score and stay in it.
Phil Mickelson tied for third. Did you see the picture on Twitter that he posted as he attempted to part the Red Sea?
Funny enough, he didn't manage it.
He didn't manage it.
Well, I was going to say, he wouldn't be able to.
He didn't
to.
Manage it. He tried, though.
Yes.
I don't know how he tried, because it was just a still photograph, so I don't know if he was, you know, suggesting anything to the waves.
No.
What would you say to try and part the Red Sea, John?
Impossible.
Well, Moses managed it, didn't he?
Yeah. On Phil, do we think he's going to win again on the PGA Tour? Do we think he's going to win worldwide? What do we think on Phil?
You would have to say.
Or is he just waiting for the... I don't think he wants to play Champions Tour yet, does he?
No.
No, I mean, he's a great player, obviously. He looks pretty fit, and he still gives it a clout, but it's very hard now at sort of his time of life. He's kind of on the swan song, isn't he? He's had a great career, and that was a good performance out in Saudi. He said he hadn't been in contention for a while since Pebble last year. I think you're not going to see as much good from Mickelson. I think it's more nostalgia now, if I'm honest.
I think he can win, yeah. Listen, he's had a good finish here this week. Isn't it Pebble that he goes and plays, where he's defending the title next? Yeah, of course.
50s.
He's coming up very shortly. Yeah,
I'd it'd be a huge ask to win on the PGA Tour at 50 years of age.
Davis Love managed it most recently.
It's an exception rather than the rule.
couple of other points of order. Excuse me. First of all, we had a few instances of players in Saudi Arabia moving very large rocks out of the way of their balls. Alvaro Quiroz, I think, enlisted. I was going to say the crowd.
You mean those impediments?
Well, this is it. I mean, and we saw Tiger do it years ago in Phoenix. Yes. We saw Brooks Koepka do it at Saudi last year. Should they be allowed to do it? I mean, these are huge rocks. These are boulder-like.
Yeah, but they're loose impediments.
If they were integral parts of the course, no, they couldn't. But the local rules decide
the clue
that
is loose impediment, or there might be a touch
heavy.
Well, this is the point. How loose is loose?
Well, it's not growing out of the ground, is it?
Yeah, but it's hardly loose. It's not, it was a windy day. They weren't moving.
Maybe you didn't hear me the first time. It's not growing out of the ground, is it?
I suppose not. Well, do rocks grow, John?
No. Of course they don't.
Finally.
Dear me.
Are you two across the story of Maverick Ancliffe at
Saudi?
The Australian. He was in the United States when he discovered he was quickly moving down the entry list, or up the entry list. Decided to hop on a plane Saturday morning. I think he was initially ninth reserve. And a friend told him, you're up to six, decided to come across to Saudi from the United States. I'm not quite sure where he gets there, because the copy doesn't say that. There's a good interview with him on the European Tour website. It doesn't actually mention when he gets there. But he's still got to get to the course. I don't think he plays a practice round, or if he does, it's very late. He's still up at 1:30 in the morning. He's teeing off at about 9:30. I mean, just how difficult is the life of that type of player? When he goes, he's not even in the event. He's got to wait for another two players to pull out. And when Richard Sunny goes out with a bad back, he's in.
Yeah. Well, I once went to an event. I think I was 30th reserve.
Did you get in?
Yeah. So it doesn't mean there are another 29 ahead of you sat there waiting and 30 drops
out.
No,
he suggested this. It all depends on what happens.
It's a fact
of
that people are not interested in going. I can't remember which tournament it was that I went to. But it is difficult to make a decision to come over from the States to go to Saudi Arabia. That is quite a long flight on the quiet.
But it was worth it.
Worth it. Made the cut.
Well, there you go. Worth it, made
12,000 euro.
And the good news is he's in the field next week.
He's got to back in this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is some travelling, isn't it? But Saudi to Australia is a lot better than America to Australia. I recommend that you do both on a plane. But every credit for him for making the effort, making the cut, making some money, and it might make a difference.
Last week, the selections, James Heath and Michael McEwen, were my guests.
Who did they go for?
Well, James went for Dustin Johnson, who was second. Ryan Fox, who was 27th, gets 10 points. Michael McEwen went for Brooks Koepka, who was 17th. And Grant Forrest, who was a tie for 27th. So that's one top 20, gets 5 points. I went for Adrian Aus, who would have been a lot higher than 27th, but for a couple of holes. You see the shot where he hit the lip of the bunker and it just buried into. I mean, how unfortunate is that?
Not really. Didn't take enough clock.
Minwoo Lee, who missed the cut, started well, but unfortunately, I was on this Australian vibe, seeing as Australians are winning every single event everywhere over the course of the last month or so. You're aware of this, John, obviously.
Run that by me again. Sorry, I wasn't paying
attention. Well, Australia.
Adam Scott, Wade Ormsby,
Cam Smith,
Leishman.
Mark Leishman.
Yes.
Yeah, and of course, Lucas Herbert.
Yeah.
So that was my train of thought with Minwoo Lee.
Lucas Herbert, was it Lucas Sherbert? I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, it might have been by the end of the round. So the standings are like this. Presenters apparently going backwards, it says here in the copy, 10 points, myself and Rob. Co-presenters to 15, that's yourself, John.
Correct.
And the guests, Richard, flying at the moment, 50 points.
No pressure at all.
Which is incredible, because I've seen you playing. It's like an octopus putting a string vest on.
No, I feel like GMAC, you know, I'm in the lead and I'm going to be comfortable with it.
We've got predictions to come a little bit later on in the show, and we're going to do predictions for both events, so to speak. Men's and women's, when it comes to the action down under. Now, head to europeantour.com to register for the Fantasy Race to Dubai game. A lot of chat on Twitter about this, why it's not appeared. It will be appearing ahead of the Masters, I'm told. So you can start thinking about your teams, John, for the Masters already. You're going to play this year, aren't you?
Aren't I?
You are, aren't you?
Aren't I?
You are. Mm. I'll give you a little text every Wednesday and say, don't forget your squad. That's if it's the same format.
John Rahm, top of the list.
There you go. And speaking of the European Tour website, it's where you can also find out what made Sergio Garcia and Henrik Stenson make these kind of noises.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh.
That is so good.
Oh.
That is so good.
Come on!
Well, it's a bit worrying, isn't it?
It is a little bit. Thought of Fleetwood and Molinari for a second there.
A bit strange.
Yeah, John, thoughts?
I would say some sort of pack.
Some sort of pack? Pack?
Hmm.
What sort of
placed
pack?
On you?
It's the 14 Club Challenge. I've no idea.
Of course it is, yes.
And it's the latest 14 Club Challenge. Sergio Garcia and Henrik Stenson. There's also content on the website featuring Henrik answering Google's most searched for questions about himself and about golf in general. That's well worth a viewing, as is our latest player blog from Minwoo Lee, who did me no favours in the competition amongst ourselves this week, but does talk about some interesting things of his career.
Are you going to go for him again this week? You could go for the brother-sister combo.
I could do. I might go for the sister.
Sister's
Minji. I'm going to go for the sister, but I'm not going to go for the brother. He let me down. And once you let me down, John, as you know, you're out. PGA Tour news. Webb Simpson defeated Tony Finau to win the Waste Management Phoenix Open, a sixth career title for Webb. Mm. He birdied 17 and 18 in regulation, then birdied 18 again in the playoff to beat Tony Finau, who led with two to play. He's got the drivable par for 17th.
Water on the left.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is with Tony. I mean, he's won once. It was a few years ago. It was a small event. I mean, this was set up for him, wasn't it?
He should have won a lot more than he had. I remember him in 2004 with his brother coming to the Scandinavian Masters when I think they were 14. And they said, do you want to see these two hit it? And I did watch them hit it. It was ridiculous. Bearing in mind the technology 16 years ago was a lot different to what it is now. And Tony's gone on to have a great career, but one win?
Puerto Rico, was it?
Talent.
Yeah. 2016.
And it's going to weigh on your mind, you know, that you get close, you get in these positions, and then you don't get across the line.
He's got to win last night,
hasn't
he? He
didn't do much wrong, though, did I? I mean, that
nobody hasn't done a lot right to win more.
At 18, he's knocked it into about 8 feet.
Yeah.
And Webb Simpson's 25 feet away.
He's not 25, was it? 15, 20?
Second one
was closer.
The first one was 25 feet right to left, bang, straight in the middle of the hole. Suddenly, Finau's mindset is, my God, you know, suddenly I've got to hold this to win it rather than two putts to win it.
He's not a good putter. He's not an aggressive putter. He's a dribbler of the ball for me on a lot of putts that, you know, you watch. I always talk about the holding speed with good putters, Tiger, Koepka, Johnson. The ball is going with pace at the hole. It's not just limping in. With Finau's, a lot of them come up 9, 10
inches short. That's right. Just kick a man while he's down.
But to go full circle, though, gritty, determined. We talked about Graham McDowell's
win. Webb Simpson's the same. Webb Simpson. Short off the tee.
Yeah.
Short is the new long.
Well, not short, but not super long.
Comparatively.
Not short. Let's lose the word short, just not monstrously long.
Mm. Yeah, because McDowell's not short, is he?
No, he's not short.
But compared to the majority of players,
he'd be shorter,
yes,
but he's
yes.
not a short hitter.
Yeah.
On to the Stayshore Tour. Kiwi Michael Long earned Stayshore Tour playing rights by winning the qualifying school final stage at Pestana Golf Resort. Also grabbing their senior tour cards were Scottish amateur Ewan McIntosh, Canadian David Morland IV, Andrew Raitt, and Carl Sunnerson, who edged out Victor Casado and Gary Marks in a playoff for the final spot.
Do you remember Andrew Raitt?
Raitt had the finger that
bitten by a dog, wasn't
bitten
it?
Bitten by a dog.
Yeah, his thumb. Yeah, sliced off, didn't
he? He was a good player.
Left or right hand?
Does it matter?
I don't know.
It's a nightmare, either one.
But anyway, it's great to see he's got onto the station.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sunnerson getting his card back. Gary Marks losing his card. He'd won on the Stayshore Tour. Tough school, that, you know, 5 cards. Fit lads they are.
Onto the Challenge Tour, and JC Ritchie successfully defended, obviously Richard's excited about this, his Limpopo Championship title and won the opening tournament on the 2020 Road to Mallorca on the Challenge Tour.
So, John, you know I'm a great hit at parties.
Yes.
What does the JC stand for in JC Ritchie?
Very clever.
John Christopher.
You think, you know, because he's South African, you'd think it'd be
Johan?
Maybe.
It's not...
What, the man upstairs?
Jesus Christ, no.
No.
Jesus. Johnny Carson.
You're not going to get it. Juan Carlos.
Juan Carlos Ritchie.
I know, you would never get it, would you? Well, when someone told me that, I thought they were pulling me a bit.
You couldn't just stick a needle in me. Damn, please.
Right, let's move on and head down under for our big preview of the week. It's the European Tour's return to Australia for the ISPS Handovic Open at 13th Beach Golf Links, a tournament with a difference. It combines European Tour men and LPGA women on the same course at the same time for the same prize money, an equal share of $3 million Australian dollars. Richard, you're across this.
Significantly. I am doing the night shift at Sky this week, covering the event. And it's a fabulous event. Basically, it's two courses, and then there's one course at the weekend, the beach course, which is the course they predominantly play.
And both men and women play both the courses.
So there's two cuts. There's the cut as you have standard on Friday night, and then on the Saturday they get it down to the top 35 only. And what happens is you still have 70 players, obviously, on the Sunday. So the final group will be the men's final three ball. The penultimate group will be the final women's three ball. And, yeah, all the way back to obviously, the first tee time. And so, as you can hear, they're playing the same course, same pin positions, different yardages. And there's two prize monies, which, you know, 1.1 million euro or dollars each, I think it's something like that, which is obviously a big prize fund. For the women, not necessarily comparatively such a big prize fund for the men. It's a really good concept. There's going to be a tournament later in the year on the European Tour, the Scandinavian Mix, which is going to be hosted by Henrik Stenson and Annika Sorenstam.
And that's played off the same tees, isn't it?
Well, no, it's going to be off different tees, but as you can see, this week is two different tournaments. That is one tournament, so the men and women all competing for one prize as opposed to...
It's a tournament within a tournament, then, this coming this week. There's a ladies' tournament and a men's tournament.
Correct.
And you're going to have 35 from both the men and the ladies cutting on a Friday and a Saturday to give you 70 players for the Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
But I guess TV coverage point of view, you're going to get to see them both at the same time, tackling the same holes at the same time effectively, aren't you?
Sure. I mean, it's very exciting because you've got two climaxes coming within, you know, 20 minutes of one another. It's a really good course as well. There's a linksy feel to it. It gets really windy. A few years ago, I think winds got up to like 55 miles an hour there. So it can be really tough. Had a brilliant finish last year with David Law. When it looked for all the world like Wade Ormsby was going to win it. And David Law with a fantastic eagle at the last after Ormsby, I think, double bogeyed the par three just moments before. It was a really good finish. You had Celine Boutier win on the LPGA Tour, which was the start of a magnificent year for her, obviously going on to make her Solheim Cup debut and be part of that brilliant win at Gleneagles. So, yeah, I think it's a fantastic concept. I know not everyone is in favour of all these mixed events, but I think it's a great way of showcasing, you know, the best players in women's golf and in men's golf as well.
It's going to be interesting to see how they tackle the same holes. Different tees, obviously, but same green complexes and pin positions.
Yeah,
John,
the conditions, you know, as Richard said, it can get windy. It's going to be about being able to move the ball, put it in the right position. Always found it really hard on really good greens, which they normally are in Australia. And a linksy-style golf course, it'll be fine grass, it'll be quick. Is the putting is very difficult indeed. For both, I don't care who you are, man or woman, so it should be a great week, and I think it'll be well supported. And it's a welcome respite, isn't it, to all the awful things that are going on in Australia with the temperatures and everything else.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because a lot of the players have already pledged to give every birdie, every eagle they make, to donate portions of their prize money. So I know a lot of money is going to be raised this week to go towards the animals that have been affected, obviously the people that have been affected, to go to the firefighters as well that have had to deal with the fires in Australia. So, yeah, I know there's going to be a lot of fundraising efforts made by everyone involved in the tournament.
You mentioned different tees, and you mentioned the Scandinavia event that's coming up, and we're going to see men play alongside the women. I remember years and years ago when Annika Sorenstam played, I can't remember which event it was now. I'm thinking, Mark.
Well,
it was
in Hawaii. Michelle Wade played in Switzerland once at Crown.
I'm sure.
And Hawaii as
and
well.
People talked about the fact that length of the tee would be an issue, but I'm sure that she came out of the event and said, not necessarily the distance that I forfeited off the tee that week, but the fact that the greens were a lot quicker and it was almost play around the greens that was so different to what she was used to every week. Is that still the same now? Is that going to be a factor this week, do you think, or not? Or are the women just as adept at men when it comes to putting and chipping on what will be European Tour?
It'll be a level playing field. It's two tournaments within a tournament.
Yeah,
this
week is not necessarily about comparing the men and the women.
But inevitably we're going to do that,
aren't we? No, but it isn't. But the one in Sweden will be, but just this week, I don't think it is. So they're playing different pars. So there'll be par fours that are par five for the women. So I think one of the courses is a par 73 for the ladies that are, I think it'll be a par 71 for the men. What's going to be interesting is how do they set up the course when they play the one in Sweden, because that's going to be, because obviously the men and the women aren't going to play off the same tees. They had that at the Jordan Mixed event last year, which was Challenge Tour, Stayshore Tour and Ladies European Tour. And it was a Challenge Tour player that won it and a Ladies European Tour player that came second. And they said the setup was perfect because let's not beat around the bush here.
That's what
the
we want to
women
see.
Can't hit the ball as far as the men generally. There are exceptions where someone like Anne Van Dam can, but in general, the ladies are 20 to 30 yards further back off the tee. So you don't want them hitting a hybrid into a hole where, you know, the men are hitting wedges and nine irons in. That wouldn't be fair.
On to the players that are participating. We'll get some selections here. You mentioned David Law, who's back to defend. We've got the 2006 US Open champion, Jeff Ogilvie, who is playing Lucas Herbert, who, of course, won in Dubai, is teeing up. And when it comes to the women's, we've got Céline Boutier, who won it last year. And, in fact, four of the past five women's winners are teeing up, not just Boutier, but the previous three or four as well, I think.
Yeah, if people are interested, I know they're listening because it's the European Tour Race Dubai show, but because it's a women's field this week, the women's event is fantastic. Last year, they only had four of the world's top 50 there. This year, they got seven of the top 30, eight major champions, two of them from the last year. So Hannah Green and Jung Un Lee Six, who won the US Open. Hannah Green won the women's PGA play. And you got the Olympic champion, Inbi Park, former world number one, Soyeon Yu, Kari Webb, Laura Davis. You got Solheim Cup players, Anne Van Dam, Hedwall Boutier, Christy Kerr, Stacey Lewis, Mel Reid. Some great youngsters as well. They're the top Australian women's players. So it's a really strong women's field. So there's a...
Well, it's a big tournament.
Yeah.
Huge tournament.
Well, they've got the Australian Open the week after as well. So
it's a nice 2 weeks down there.
And because it's Olympic year as well, so that's why, for example, someone like Inbi Park is keen to get events and, you know, get into that Korean women's Olympic team's not going to be easy. So the men's field is not, as you say, I mean, personally, when I'm going to be looking for a winner, I'm going to be looking at the Australian players as the potential champions.
Come on then, we'll do men's first. Who are you going for? Give us... Your two.
I'm going Lucas Herbert.
Okay, I was going to switch it first, but
go on, I'm happy.
Go on, Lucas. Let me write this down because I'll forget.
Yes, you will. And do you want another one off me?
I want another one for the men. So you've got Lucas Herbert, winner in Dubai, to go in again on the European Tour. Plus, don't take all day.
It's
and
a
tour.
All right.
Say something when you're looking.
How Tung Lee.
Hao Tung Lee. So you've gone for two of the favourites. That,
well,
must have taken some brain power.
Well, it's interesting. Class is class, isn't it? Do you want ladies as well while I'm at it?
Can I just say, because he's mentioned those two, it's quite an important week in terms of Sunday will be the cutoff to get into the match play in Austin, Texas, the WGC World Golf Championship event. Need to be top 64. Now, I haven't got the latest world rankings with me, but I think Herbert and Hao Tung Lee are both in the 70s. I think a win this week could push them towards that top 64 and get them into that event. So there's an extra incentive for the two players that John has chosen.
Hao Tung Lee is 79 at the moment. Lucas Herbert is 84.
Yeah, so there's a chance
so a
that
they win,
could.
They probably would get in.
It might not be enough.
But it's on their radar.
Because the top 60, it will go beyond 64. Not all the top 64 will play in Austin. So
and do you want my
it goes down
picks?
To 70, something like that normally.
Go on then, give Inbi us your
Park.
Ladies. Hang on a second, Inbi Park.
You've taken one of
mine.
Oh,
well, you'll have to have someone else.
Well, I'm having it.
He can have Inbi Park. I'll go for someone else, it's fine.
And the defending champion.
Do you know, I knew you were going to go for Céline Boutier.
Well, you know, if you've got previous...
She's playing well as well.
Yes. Right?
She's played two events this
year.
So
I think you'll find
10.
That's my four picks.
Two good picks.
Two good picks, yeah.
I mean, Hao Tung Lee, I don't know, and Lucas Herbert, I don't know where you got them from.
No, I don't.
Off the starting list, actually.
Yeah. And you looked at the odds, the two favourites.
Richard, come on then, who are you going for?
Okay, so I will go opposite of John, because he's taken Inbi Park, who was one of my choices. I will go for outsiders... pretty much all the way.
Okay.
I'm going to go for Nick Flanagan.
Okay.
Who was a fantastic up-and-coming Australian golfer who, for I won't go into all the details in the story, for one reason or another, kind of fell away. He was on the PGA Tour, fell away. He's found his game again. Last year, he played this event and actually shot a 62 on one of the courses. He likes the golf course, and you can see his form's coming around. He hasn't got a PGA Tour card anymore, a web.com Corn Ferry Tour card, hasn't got a European Tour card. I think he's a player that belongs on one of the top tours in the world, and I think extra incentive for him this week. And the other man I would choose is Jason Scrivener, who had a bizarre incident in this event last year, was leading in the third round, and he went to mark his golf ball, and then he basically got a penalty on the green for not putting it back in the right spot, or he forgot to put the marker back in the right place. Completely by accident, had a brain freeze. And he's a player who...
Played well in Sun City, didn't he?
Well, at the end of last year, he was in some terrific form. Whether, you know, he can refine that form this week, we shall see. But I know he likes the golf course, and I know he's a player, if you like, one of those due a European Tour win. So for the women, I will go... Seeing as Westwood and GMAC have won after being vice-captains at the Ryder Cup, I will go for someone who was a surprise vice-captain at the Solheim Cup, who has won on this golf course before.
Will you get on with it?
Mel Reid. Mel Reid. And the other player I will go for is someone who lives at the golf course.
Greg Norman.
No, Marianne Skarpnord.
Oh, yes.
Who's engaged to Richard Green. Now, a few years ago, they're engaged to each other. They both live by the course. He won the men's. And she won the ladies.
He held him one.
Yeah, he held him one at par 4.
But he pull-hooked it left in the trap. It jumped out of the trap, ran down the bank and into the hole. He'd no idea.
Very good, it did, yeah.
Lucky. I am going for the men, Sean Crocker. Last three starts in Australia, 7th, 5th and 9th.
Nice.
So some nice form. Are you listening, John?
Yes.
Nice form in Australia. Made the cut in Abu Dhabi, Dubai and Saudi against better opposition, obviously. And Brad Kennedy, who was second in this event last year, 19th in 2018, and won the Japan Open in October. So he's got a bit of winning
form. He nearly won the Australian PGA when he was injured as well. So, yeah.
There you go. There's my two. And for when it comes to the women, I am going to go for Minji Lee. I went for brother last week. I'm going for sister this week. And also Esther Henselite. I've got that right?
You got it right, yeah.
And the form about Hester is?
Well, she is only 20, I think, only been a pro a year. She won the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit as a rookie by winning the final event of the year, her first professional win with the final
round. This was out in Kenya.
Yeah, 64 final round, overturning a 7-shot deficit. Great player.
Good
pedigree. We've put some colour to our selections rather than you, John.
We'll just
looked
see
at
how
the list and given two names.
We'll see how we get
on. Yeah, I like John's chances, mind you.
Yeah, because he's picked the favourites. Again, that is your lot for now. Next week, we'll hopefully be speaking to the winner of the Vic Open. And we've got a very special guest teed up as well to join us on the Race to Dubai show. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from EuropeanTour.com and the official app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But for now, Richard, enjoyed your company.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And John as well.
Feelings not mutual.
Excellent. Are you on taxi service today? Can you give me a lift back to Chiswick?
I'll tell you what I can do for you. I can find you a nice little bus route you can sit
Wonderful. On. I'm getting the U5 back to Hayes and Harlington Station then. And from me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll see you soon.